Bridgerton is back. The first season of the Netflix romance series became a hit at the end of 2020, and now another sibling from the Bridgerton family is having their story told. There's still high drama, there's still scandalous gossip, and there are still elaborate period costumes that sometimes take over entire scenes. What's different, what's the same, and how do Daphne and her Duke figure into this season? I'm Linda Holmes, and today we're catching up with Bridgerton on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Discovery Plus. How does it feel to chase a sports legacy, fight for justice, or compete in a competitive table-setting competition? On Discovery Plus, you can stream hundreds of human stories, from new originals like Werner Herzog's Last Exit Space to acclaimed masterpieces like RGB, Man on Wire, and Jiro Dreams of Sushi. It's the streaming home of documentaries, plus so much more. Discovery Plus. Start your free trial. Terms apply.
Joining us today is NPR senior editor Barry Hardiman. Hi, Barry.
Hi there.
Also with us is film critic and culture journalist Bidatri D. Chaudhry. Hello, Bidatri. Welcome back.
Hi, Linda. So good to be back.
And rounding out our panel today is Sophie Hernandez-Simeonidis. Hello, Sophie. Sophie is a production assistant for Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Welcome.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
So a bit of a primer for those of you who need one. Bridgerton is based on a series of Regency romance novels by Julia Quinn that tell the stories of each of the eight siblings in the high society Bridgerton family. So when we say Regency, that's a slice of the early 1800s that has a long history in romance, lots of gowns and dukes and scandal and so forth. In the first season, we followed Daphne Bridgerton, who fell in love with a duke named Simon. This season is about the story of her brother Anthony, who is played by Jonathan Bailey. He's the oldest and kind of the quote-unquote man of the household since his father died. Anthony has decided it's time to grow up and get married, so he's looking for a wife, very much focused on a kind of rational and correct match rather than on falling in love. We'll see how long that lasts. Meanwhile, we meet a woman named Kate Sharma, played by Simone Ashley. Kate is also an older sibling. She's Indian, and she's only in London temporarily to help find a husband for her younger sister, Edwina. So there's a potential match between Anthony and Edwina, but it's complicated, you might say, by this sort of love-hate attraction developing between Anthony and Kate. What will happen? The show comes out of Shondaland, which is Shonda Rhimes' company. It was created by Chris Van Dusen. It's also worth mentioning that Regé Jean Page, who played Simon in the first season and was kind of the breakout star, does not appear in this season at all. Simon is off taking care of the baby that he and Daphne now have. So while you see a little bit of her from time to time during family events, you will not see him this time around. The show is streaming on Netflix now. Bidatri, my intel is that you did not watch the first season, but you have now watched this season. How did you like it?
I am very overwhelmed, like just by the beauty of it, like beauty of the people, beauty of the sets, beauty of the costumes. Yeah. And, you know, I couldn't stop watching. It's like, I remember when I was 13 or so, I used to read these books called the Mills and Boons romance books. This was a little bit like that.
For sure, for sure. All right, Sophie, what did you think?
I had a great time watching it. I have never really been a Shondaland girl. Historical fiction is not really my thing. I watched the entirety of season one so quickly. I was not a big fan of Anthony whatsoever. He was my least favorite character. So I was so hesitant going into season two, because I was like, I don't know how he's going to redeem himself in my eyes. And honestly, I think he did. He really became a more well-rounded emotional character, and that spoke a lot to me.
Yeah.
And I thought the new characters were really interesting, and I wanted to know more about them. And it also went into the history of some of the existing characters that I thought was very interesting, like Lady Danbury and Violet, who is the head of the Bridgerton household other than Anthony. And I was really glad to see those friendships and those relationships really blossom in this second season as well.
Yeah, I agree. You know, you talk about Anthony, and in the first season, he had this sort of like sex only relationship going with this woman from like what they were making you treat as like the wrong side of the tracks or whatever, unacceptable in polite society.
The red velvet side of the tracks, if you will.
The red velvet side of the tracks. I agree. I found that story a little distasteful, kind of the way that woman was treated. I had the same reaction. I was like, I don't know if I'm into that guy, but I came around to it. Barry, where did you come down on this season?
So before I say anything, I should say that I have my head in historical fiction, in romance.
Gotcha.
Have read and reread these Bridgerton books a million times. They are on every digital device, and they also hard copy in my home. And so I will say I was disappointed in this season, even though I do very much agree with everything that you guys have said. I think it was gorgeous. Some of the backstory stuff, I think you're right, Sophie, with Violet, I thought was very sensitive and sort of beautifully treated. As a whole, I think that the showrunners have fundamentally misunderstood the project of Bridgerton. Sorry. And now my TED Talk. The thing about, I mean, I think about romance in general, but in particular with these books, is that the Bridgerton family is a powerful family with money and connections. And what they do is they use their power for good. That is the deal. They are the knights in shining armor. In the book, in one of the very first scenes with Kate and Edwina, Anthony sort of sweeps in and does a very lovely thing for Penelope Featherington. He does something sort of beautiful and elevates her in front of the awful Cressida Crowper. And I thought, what a missed opportunity. And those moments of him like standing up for a person that is not Edwina or Kate were gone. And I thought, you know, he could have used that, especially because, like, you know, yeah, he's super annoying. But, you know, one of the things that's so wonderful about the character is he's not just the man who didn't want love, who found it. He's kind of complex. And yeah, he does become a better guy. But the reason you know from the beginning you are going to root for him, even though he's kind of being a jerk to some of the people, is that he makes these moments of courage happen.
One of the things I want to talk about a little bit is in the first season, you know, Simon is played by a Black actor. The mm-hmm. Queen is a Black woman. But one of the things people talked about is that fact is sort of totally ignored. Like, there's one brief conversation that acknowledges that race even exists in this world. Mm-hmm. And it did seem to me like in this season, and Kate is not Indian in the book, the fact that this family is now an Indian family is something that they incorporate into the story sort of throughout. That's part of like the family rituals of this family. It's part of how the wedding rituals are specific. And it did seem like that was a little bit more intentional.
Agreed.
The fact that these three women are Indian is part of the story and it's in the story. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
I do. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but also, I mean, to the point, Linda, the only thing that struck me was, are they even acknowledging, and this is the 1800s, so are they even acknowledging that they are colonized?
Yes! Mm-hmm. Oh, such a good point.
Exactly. I think the larger historical and kind of geographic context is missing.
Yeah.
But at least there are specific identity elements around the family that are acknowledged, if that makes sense. Sophie, what are you thinking?
I'm just reminded of the scene where the grandparents come over and they all have a family dinner together and mm-hmm. a fight ensues. And it comes out that the only way that Edwina can access her trust, essentially that's set up by her grandparents, is by marrying like an English man of great wealth or of great...
Titled.
Yes, a titled mm-hmm. English man. And that sat so weirdly with me just because I think that was really the only time that they may be acknowledging that status between like being from India and being from England. And I really do think they could have delved into that more in like a more constructive way.
For sure, for sure.
It's like the critique of the colonizer is so cute. Like, it's just like, oh, I don't like your tea, you know?
Yes.
It's just very cute. So given how well-read and opinionated Kate is,
mm-hmm.
I would think she would, you know, say something on this.
And also Anthony, you know, I mean, think about the missed opportunity of these two, you know, will they, won't they's, who are sparring verbally the entire time, right? Imagine if Kate had brought up the idea that England is a colonial power at all and Anthony had had something and they could have sparred about this. Like, this would have been a wonderful part of Anthony's change, you know, of like, I'm not marrying for love. It could have been, you know, that he also had a mm-hmm. Some epiphany about England's role in the world. You know, there was this opportunity to say so much.
Yeah, I getcha. I will say it really helped me enjoy this season that I really, really liked Kate. I love this mm-hmm. Simone Ashley performance.
Every time she was on screen, I was just entranced.
Yeah, talk about unrealistic standards for South Asian women. I see you, Simone Ashley.
Uh-huh.
And it's interesting to me because she's a different type than Daphne in the first season, right? Daphne in the first season is the sort of virginal, quiet, and candidly, all of this, you know, was heavily to me influenced by, at least in their telling of it, like she's this very porcelain skinned.
Sure. Yeah.
And Kate is playing kind of the more headstrong, interesting, more independent.
Oh, and she's 100 years old. She's 26. I mean, she's an old maid.
Right. She's yes, an old maid. Yeah. She's old enough that she's come to peace with the fact that she's not maybe going to get married right now, if at all. Mm. Her priority is Edwina. Her priority is taking care of the family. And in a way, this is one of the things that kind of unites these characters, right? They're both the person who feels responsible for taking care of the family. Kate, to me, is such a more interesting heroine than Daphne was. Mm. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I just found her a terrifically fun woman to be invested in over the course of the season.
Agreed. I thought it was sort of brave of Simone Ashley to make it such an understated performance in a romance novel.
And those brows.
Oh my, I went into a shop yesterday and I was like, can I show you a screenshot? Anyway, so she definitely is working with an extremely expressive set of features, but I thought it was sort of brave of her not to do, you know, there wasn't a lot of huffing and puffing. It was really just wonderful. What did you guys think of Edwina? I'm interested to know.
I was honestly so indifferent to her until the scene on her wedding day where she talked to the king. And I was like, there's so much more for her to offer. I almost feel like they did do her a little bit dirty because she is the little sister. I almost think maybe they purposefully didn't round out her character until that moment, until later when she stands up to Kate and is like, I'm my own person. I don't want to stand in your shadow. I don't want you to be doing all these things for me that you should be doing for yourself. But the scene on her wedding day, the way that she is able to like calm down the king and talk to him like he's a person rather than the way that everyone else treats him like someone who's sick and someone who needs to be treated and needs to be talked down to, I thought that was a really beautiful way of highlighting her character and who she is, and that made me want to see more of her.
I hear the two of you faced many trials during your happy courtship. But today will make all of it well worth it, will it not?
You know, I agree with you, Sophie, that, you know, I did not really care much for her. And then she just seemed like so dewy. Oh, I'll marry for love, you know, that kind of a thing.
Yeah.
But then there's that one scene where she's very angry and everyone's like, just have some tea. And then she just bursts out and she says, it's not tea that I need. Mm-hmm. But that is the scene that kind of got me hooked on to her because I'm like, okay, so she's more than this petulant little sister person in the plot.
Yeah, I think I started off kind of feeling like Edwina was stuck being the somewhat personalityless representation of sweet, you know, almost in the position that Daphne was in, except not getting to be the central character.
That's exactly what I was thinking.
Exactly.
But I did like the fact that over time she got an opportunity to kind of reconsider, you know, how important that is and what exactly it is that she wants. One other thing that I'm curious about that I want to talk about is that in the first season of this show, there was a ton of discussion of how much sex was in it.
Oh, this was so disappointing.
I have so much. I have so many thoughts on this.
The big thing that went around in some of the early discussions of this show is this is Shondaland. It's Shonda Rhimes if you could show sex. It kind of really grounded the relationship between Daphne and Simon in these very explicit sex scenes that were a big part of, I think, the relationship and the plot.
A huge part of the plot.
This season, it's not that there's no sex in it, but it is much more about the yearning and the wanting and the longing and all that, as opposed to actually showing you the sex. Sophie, what are some of these many thoughts you have?
There's one particular scene that stands out to me, and it is also at the same dinner with the grandparents. It's right after Anthony stands up for the Sharmas and basically says, you're not invited to our wedding, you're awful. And after that, Anthony and Kate have a moment alone.
You are the bane of my existence. And the object of all my desires. night and day, I dream of you.
It was very Keira Knightley in Pride and Prejudice, 100%. Where they're meeting in the rain and they're so angry at each other that they just want to make out. And I was just waiting for that moment, and they just get so close together but don't touch. And I live for moments of yearning. And it was very horny, in my opinion. Yes. Like, I thought all of the scenes were like full of yearning and very thirsty. And there was one very significant sex scene between Kate and Anthony that happens toward the latter part of the season.
One.
But it wasn't what I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be on all the time. I thought it was like in the previous season, there were going to be a lot of sex scenes that were important to the plot, but I want to see it.
No, I'm with you. And one of the things about romance novels in general is that they're quite clever, these authors, at finding ways to insert like non-consummation sex, to be sprinkling it across the pages. And there were so many opportunities. And the thing is, I love a yearning gaze and I love an almost kiss. There were so many of them that it actually took away the power of the almost kisses.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, at one point, like, I think it's in that scene, Zevi, he's like, do you even know all the ways I could seduce you? And I literally was screaming like,
oh my God,
I do. I can give you a couple right now.
See, I thought it was hot. I liked that it was like that. And it is a really different plot, as you guys were talking about. It's a different plot because if you're writing a romance like the first season was, where the people start having sex well before they sort of fall in love and you get like the romantic, like it's a very convenient thing if you can have all the sex stuff before you get the falling in love stuff. And it happens in lots of romance novels as well, because it means you can put sex throughout the book. And then only at the end do you have kind of the romantic whatever. But if you have a store that more of a will they won't they love hate kind of enemies to lovers kind of thing, then you have a situation where you can't really just throw in them having sex with each other all throughout, at least not in this kind of story. Sometimes you can have some hate sex and then they say, well, I regret it and we're not gonna ever do that again, blah blah blah, but that's not this story.
But you know what I really liked about, and especially again having an Indian heroine, is they don't make it about honor. And, you know, because that's such a low-hanging fruit a brown hero. And you're like, oh, she's not having sex because she wants to protect her honor. But it's not the case. So I was like, okay, this is cool. She's not having sex because she hates him.
Yeah. No, that's right.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And actually, since I keep complaining, can I say one thing that I think they did quite well? There were two, like, B plots that I thought, and one was bad and one was good. And the one that was good was the Anthony watching his father die and being really, really screwed up from it. And watching, you get a flashback of Violet grieving her husband. And I thought all of that was really quite well done. And you really did get a sense of like, well, okay, it wasn't just that normal, like, I swore it off love. He swore off love because he saw his mother in the deepest pain and distress.
Right.
I completely agree. I really love the way that they rounded out Violet so well in this season. And that you kind of get to see different aspects of her as a mother. Whereas last season, I felt more or less indifferent towards her, especially after her sex talk with her newly wedded daughter was, oh, if dogs can do it, you can figure it out. Like, that was her sex talk. That was insane to me. So kind of just seeing the way that she's a mother was so affected by something that also Anthony was very severely affected by, seeing the death of their husband and father, was something that I found really interesting about her character. And then also the way that she developed friendships with people like Lady Danbury and like their established friendships.
Oh, that scene.
Where they get the giggles.
Peacocks! Dreadful creature! The attack unprovoked!
As if the day could get any more unfortunate!
You could always.
It just reminded me of like when you stay up all night with your best friend and just start laughing so hard you're crying about the dumbest things ever.
At nothing.
And it just made me feel so good.
Yeah, I agree.
Shouts for sure to, I think particularly for me, Adjua Ando, who plays Lady Danbury. I just think is so much fun to watch.
Amazing.
I'm telling you, like, she just is wielding every part of that role with her voice, with her body, with her eyebrows. Like, she's just doing the most.
I think Barry just wants all the Bridgerton eyebrows. That's my takeaway from this discussion.
When you get it right, you get it right.
It's not just Barry.
Yeah.
It's not just Barry.
That's right. That's right.
This entire show is eyebrow goals. And I want to say one more thing, which is I also credit Twitter for having already provided the thirst gifts of Anthony getting out of the water in the most transparent shirt I've ever seen in my life.
That was absurd, so absurd and so marvelous.
It's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's no one's shirt.
No, sir. That is lingerie, my friend.
This is a nude man with a tissue around him.
That is right.
Look, I think people will feel how they will feel. You will still get your little things about Lady Whistledown. And
I felt so bad for Penelope the entire season. Yeah. I was like, this girl is going through it. Someone help her.
Yeah. And you kind of get the feeling, and this is not a spoiler because it just is what it is, but you kind of get the feeling that the long view is her with Colin Bridgerton, who's her best friend.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And I look at that and I'm like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Right.
The same way we were talking about with Anthony. Like, it's going to take a while for me to want her with that guy.
Yeah.
Although in the final episode, there's a moment where she overhears Colin talking to his friends.
You're courting the girl, Bridgerton. Are you mad? I would never dream of courting Penelope Featherington. Not in your wildest fantasies, Fife.
And it hurt me so bad because I have been through this of like a boy you like or someone that you have a crush on and like just you feeling so intense and then overhearing them be like, oh yeah, I would never court Penelope Featherington. Like that hurt me so badly.
Yeah.
And you know what? Sophie, that is like a huge plot point that is told from several points of view in the series. And I actually thought that was one of the B plots that I thought actually was kind of good. Like because again, like I don't know anyone who hasn't had that brand of pain.
Yeah.
But yeah, you're right, Linda. We got a while to get to, you know, to Mr. Bridgerton.
That guy has some work to do.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. What actually made me sadder than, you know, what made Sophie and Barry sad is when she throws her quill into the fire.
Oh, mm-hmm.
And I'm like, no, I was like, no. Just like, you know, do something, get another quill, like, you know.
Yeah.
Go get a ballpoint.
Exactly.
That
scene made me so sad. She will. Yeah.
Same. I agree. Well, we want to know what you think about season 2 of Bridgerton, now streaming on Netflix, as we mentioned. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Barry Hardiman, Badatri D. Chaudhry, Sophie Hernandez, Simeonidis. Thanks to all of you for being here to talk about Bridgerton. Yay.
Yay.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
That was so fun.
And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second and you're so inclined, sign up for our newsletter. That's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. I write that one most weeks. This episode was produced by Candace Lim, Anna Isaacs, and Mike Katziff, and edited by Jessica Reedy. Hello Come In provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. A special thanks to Patrick Murray for his help on this episode. I'm Linda Holmes, and we'll see you all tomorrow when we will be talking about the new movie, The Lost City.